This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, welcome, 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 wherever you are in the world today, to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at EmpowerRadio.com. I'm always really excited about the guests that I bring on, whose information that I share. Today, I'm feeling a lot more excited and very connected to the message that Madeline Somerville has to relay. To kind of regress a little bit, my dad died about 18 years ago, and he was probably one of the front runners of recycle and reuse. And I know every time I throw a can out, he's up there somewhere kind of scalding me, you know. It always reminds me to, okay, Dad, I got it. I'm not going to throw this out. I'm going to recycle it. Well, that's what Madeline's message is all about. It's all about reducing waste on the planet and really stepping into greener living and, of course, my favorite word, simplicity. I had a house fire 12 years ago, and since then, I have really been practicing living a simpler life, more connected to the earth, you know, more connected to the essence of my soul and to the people in my life. And Madeline has this super cute blog, Sweet Madeline. Who doesn't love that title, right? And she's got a great book out called All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. Okay, who doesn't want that? Stress-free simplicity. So, Madeline, welcome to Soulful Living.
Hi, Terry. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. And so how do you step into stress-free living? Like, what brought you to this place in your life of really recognizing that all you need is less?
Well, it was kind of a conflation of different things. And I think it started with wanting to be more eco-friendly. I wanted to make sure that the products I was using in my home and on my body were healthy for me and for the people around me and for the environment. And that's where it began. And then as I sort of went down that road and started making my own products and buying secondhand instead of buying new, it gradually just turned into having less because I realized that that was just the way I felt more comfortable. It brought me less stress. I was able to live my life in a way that wasn't constantly looking for the next thing to buy because so many things I had decided weren't worth it buying. And it just changed the way I looked at the world. And so I wanted to bring that message to other people and also emphasize that it didn't have to be horrible. Like, I had kind of always thought of eco-friendly living as this thing you had to do. You know, it was very virtuous and it was very good. And I knew I should be doing it, but it seemed like a lot of work. So I kind of put it off for a while. And once I got into it, I realized that it was really fun and it was kind of cool that I got to make my own stuff. I felt like a wizard every time I whipped up body lotion or something. And I wanted to make sure that other people knew that too, that it could be fun and funny and exciting and it didn't have to be this chore on a to-do list.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you relate it that way because when I began healthier eating, let's just say, people would say, oh my God, it's so inconvenient. It's so, you know, it's so expensive. Well, once you know, maybe initially while you're testing and learning, but once you create that as your lifestyle, it is super easy and it becomes simpler because that's just the way that you are. It's the natural part of how you're living. And as I step into a more eco-friendly based way of living, certainly not where you're at, girl, you are like my idol, I swear. But as I step into it, I realize, you know, like you said, it is kind of fun. And when you begin creating little things at home that really make a difference in your life, it's exciting.
I think so. And don't you think that the hardest part is just getting started? Like the hardest part is just beginning. And you look at, you know, I'm sure we've all bought eco-friendly books before and you're all excited and you look at all the recipes and you think, okay, I'm going to do this. And then it sits on your shelf for the next year and a half mocking you because you haven't tried anything because it's just a little bit intimidating. And that's what I kind of wanted to get away from, was just present really easy recipes. It didn't require, you know, a trip to the other side of town to this one obscure store that carried this one obscure expensive ingredient. I wanted to make it really simple, ingredients that you could find in your grocery store, and that it took out all that intimidation of actually trying something. And so I hope I accomplished that. And I think that, because that's the hardest part, is just beginning something. And then once you do one thing and it works, you're kind of like, hey, this is cool. And then you already have all the ingredients to try the next recipe because they all use, you know, the same combination of five or six ingredients. So it's really easy to let that initial success keep you going.
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting. For example, like in your book, you talk about this quick tip with banana peels. You know, something like banana peels aren't just for slapstick hijinks anymore.
Yeah, right?
They make a great polish. Well, I had always heard that and I never tried it. And the day before yesterday, I used that banana peel to clean off some gunk that was on one of my pieces of silverware. And I was amazed. I'm like, oh my God, this stuff works. This is amazing.
Yeah. I know. It's so exciting when it works. There's a recipe in there too for cleaning your silver. I used to have to clean silver when I was younger, like my parents' silverware, and I would be sitting at a table with this huge roll of paper towels and this tiny little bottle of this horrible, stinky silver polish, and that was my job. I would sit there for hours polishing this silver before they had dinner parties or something. And I discovered this method that you could use with, like, you line a thing with a container with tin foil, you put some baking soda in and some boiling water, and then you just dump everything in there, and it just, there's some sort of reaction between the tin foil and the baking soda, and the silverware is cleaned just effortlessly. And it's like watching magic happen. You bring it out and it's spotless and everything is gorgeous. And I mean, the first time I did that, it was like, this is crazy. It's so exciting when it actually works, because that's the key. It has to work, right? There's no point in, I always find it frustrating when I buy an eco-friendly product to replace, you know, a more toxic one, but it doesn't work as well, because I don't want to sacrifice how well something works just because it's earth-friendly. It has to be both. And that's what I found with the recipes that are in the book. So that was really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. So could you use that like on jewelry or anything like that?
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's really great for jewelry with a lot of elaborate inlays or detailing that you couldn't really get into with a normal polish. You just want to be careful that you're not using it on anything with accents of bone or leather, anything that can't be submerged in water. But yeah, I just did this the other day. I took all my jewelry and cleaned it, and then you just rub it with a soft cloth after, and it's gorgeous. It looks brand new.
That's awesome. I hope my daughter's listening, because that's one of the things that she pays a lot of money for. You know, she'll take her stuff to the jeweler every now and then to have it all clean. And I always think there's got to be a better way.
Oh, yeah. Have her try that. It's really exciting. If she's got kids or anything, too, it's fun for them to watch, because it's like this transformation as you dip it. You can see it changing.
Yeah, well, okay, so speaking of kids, I mean, you have a two-year-old, and I bet that's got to be a big priority to you, you know, because you read all of the poisons and the dangerous signs on the back of labels. It's kind of like watching drug commercials now where they say this drug could cause, I don't know, your liver to collapse
blindness
or something,
and liver
right?
Failure.
But that's what
yeah,
you see
I know.
On the back of labels. So when you have a child, I mean, that's got to be a huge inspiration for you.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, especially a first-time parent, and I try and be as laid back as I can, but I'm sure I am, you know, a first-time crazy parent in many ways, and you want to make your environment as safe as possible. But I really wasn't into sort of making my home like Fort Knox. I didn't want to have cupboard locks on everything and, you know, toilet locks and have everything have to get through, you know, a million different things to get into. Mm-hmm. And now that I've been using natural stuff for so long, I look back and I kind of, it's funny to me that I spent so many years cleaning my home with products that told me on the label that they were poisonous and toxic. And I mean, they told us that it's right there. And I don't know why I was still putting that into my home and on the surfaces that I walked on and the surfaces that I ate off of. It's very strange to me now that I look back. But at this point, because my ingredients are things like baking soda and vinegar and stuff like that, I really don't have to worry about Olive getting into any of it. And what that helps with as well is that she can help me with a lot of my cleaning. So when I clean the floor, she can grab a cloth and pretend that she's cleaning too. And I don't have to worry about her little hands getting soaked in whatever I'm using, because it's just dish soap and water and a bit of vinegar. You know, that's not a big deal if her hands come in contact with that. So it's way easier to include her and, you know, make, you know, child labor, get her involved in it too at a young age.
Well, then she'll be a jump ahead of us, you know. So when she, when she's old enough to be in her own place and have her own family, she won't be starting from scratch like we were. You know, she'll already have those tools embedded in her, and she won't have to have that part of parenting be the thing that freaks her out. You know, she'll have other things for sure, but it won't be that.
Well, and it's kind of funny because I feel like we sort of, all of these skills and these recipes, I feel like they may have skipped a few generations and now we're coming back to it. You know, our grandmothers or maybe our great-grandmothers didn't have Windex and Mr. Clean and all of these weird products that we use. They didn't have Febreze. So what did they use? They had clean homes. They had clean clothes. What did they use? And so I feel like we, as we're becoming more environmentally conscious, are going back to that and thinking, okay, what did people use before they had plastic wrap? What did people use before they had plastic bags? And just sort of, you know, we've gone full circle and everything old is new again.
Well, and I know something that you're really focused on is reducing waste. You know, we had some major floods here a few weeks ago, and God, so many people's basements flooded, but so many people's basements flooded that the garbage dumps actually had to shut down for a couple of days because they ran out of space to put everything. And, you know, then, you know, fast forward to yesterday, my husband and I were out on a nature trip and we're driving around this area and it's a landfill. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I mean, what's going to happen when more and more, places are running out of space to put all of the consumerism, all the garbage that we have because of our need for more stuff. You know, what's going to happen? So how can people really step into, gently and easily, guilt-free, right? Step into reducing waste, you know, little by little in their homes, in the grocery stores. What would you say is the first things that they could do for that?
Well, this is one of the best places to begin because it doesn't really require a lot of effort. You don't need to go out and research a bunch of stuff. You don't need to buy anything for new recipes. You don't need to really change much. All you need to do is stop doing something. And what you're stopping doing is consuming. And I like to tell people that there's four questions that I run through in my head before I buy anything. And the idea is not to live without. You don't want to deprive yourself. It's not like being on a diet where you're going to feel hungry all the time for possession. Just trying to cut out the clutter and figure out what you actually need. Because at the core of this is the idea that possessions aren't treats. And we think that they are because we like shopping. We buy ourselves things to treat ourselves. And, you know, it's this nice little activity for us. But the responsibilities, and just like you were saying, when you buy something, it costs money, first of all, as we all know, and nobody has enough of that ever. And it costs space in your home. It costs time for you to clean it and maintain it. It costs money if you want to fix it. And then you have to dispose of it, hopefully responsibly. So a possession is a responsibility. And if you think about it like that, you're not depriving yourself by not buying things. You're actually freeing yourself from that responsibility. So I like to run through, and I do it sort of subconsciously now. I don't have a list that I check off, you know, but I run it through my head when I want to buy something, which is often because we all want things. But first I ask myself if I really need it. And that's a tough one because the answer a lot of the time is no, which I hate because I really want that gorgeous pillow or I really want that cool little figurine, but no, I don't really need it. So it might just end up being clutter or it might, you know, I might not like it anymore in 3 months and then what's going to happen to it? So I ask myself, do I need it? And then if the answer to that question is yes, and I do need it, I ask, can I buy it secondhand? And this is a great way to cut down on the amount of consumer goods that are entering that cycle of buy, replace, buy, replace. So if you do need it, see if you can find it secondhand. And what's this going to do is it's going to make it cheaper, first of all. And you're also going to find more quality products, because if something has been used by somebody for 2 years and it still looks like it's in fairly good shape, you're pretty well assured that it's a quality product and it's going to last. Mm-hmm. And if you can't find it secondhand, I ask, can I make it? And that's where things like, you know, beauty products and cleaning products get cut out for me, because I can make those and I do. And then if you do need it, you can't make it, you can't buy it secondhand, I buy the best quality that I can afford. And this doesn't mean bankrupting yourself to buy, you know, the hemp shirt that's $60 or something, but it just means that don't go for the cheapest item all the time, because cheap is often more expensive in the long run, because you'll end up buying it again and again and again as it breaks. So if you're looking for a new pair of shoes, buy a really good quality pair that's going to last, as opposed to a really trendy, cheap pair that might not be around in 3 months. So those are just some new
questions. Well, and you know, it's funny. Those are all questions I ask myself when I'm making a purchase now, especially having had a house fire where I lost almost everything. When I met my husband, my house fire was 12 years ago. And when my husband and I started dating, I should say, I didn't have any furniture in my living room. I didn't bring stuff back into my house that I didn't absolutely love or need. That's one of the things that I add to mine. Do I really, really love this? Because if I don't love it, to me, then it's just like, as you said, it's clutter. It's something that's fulfilling a need in me that's probably not really addressing what the issue is. You know, that's a whole other story, right? But I didn't even have furniture. For 6 months, he and I were dating, and he said, you have to get living room furniture. And I said two things. Why? You know, why do I have to have living room furniture? Because somebody else says I should? And secondly, you know, what am I going to get? Because I have not seen anything that I absolutely loved. And to me, it wasn't necessarily a need. My kids were young enough that, man, we had a blast in that vacant living room.
Oh, they must have loved that big space.
Yeah, we had tent parties and we had dance-a-thons and we did all kinds of crazy stuff in that empty living room.
You must have found, I don't know, maybe you didn't, but it seems like after you got over the initial shock and sadness of all your things, it must have felt a little bit freeing, like starting from scratch, and you got to really choose everything that you brought in. Like, did you feel like that at all after the fire?
Absolutely. It was very freeing, and it really opened my mind up to, and I'm definitely not perfect of it. Like I said, you're my idol, right? It opened my mind up to starting to be more conscious of not only what I'm bringing into my home, but what I'm doing to the planet. Because guess what? All that stuff went somewhere too. It went to a landfill. And I started thinking about that, like, oh my God, all this stuff just went somewhere and it took up space that everybody on my block is doing. And then, you know, you factor that out to what everybody in the world is experiencing. And it was kind of overwhelming. So it was a great opportunity for me to reflect and say, okay, if I don't really need it or I don't really love it, it's not coming back into my house.
Absolutely. And it's, I mean, we're so efficient in our society now. And it's actually really nice that we have things like plumbing and sewage and landfill, because I don't really want to live with garbage in my backyard. But it's also really easy to forget that once your garbage men pick up your garbage and take it somewhere, it doesn't just disappear. Like, it goes and it sits somewhere, and everything that doesn't decompose just sits there forever. And it's so easy to forget that because we don't see it.
Yeah. And like, you know, yesterday when I drove by that landfill, my husband is a former firefighter and he did a lot of stuff in his city with methane gas and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But there were these tubes sticking out of it. And he's like, yeah, this is what happens. You know, they do a layer, they grow the grass, they have the pipes in there, because as you said, it sits there. And what is happening in that landfill, I can't even wrap my mind around it. You know, it's just, it's methane. It's all decomposing and some stuff not decomposing. It's really crazy.
Yeah, and it can feel overwhelming. And I sometimes get to this point too where you start thinking about that and you start thinking about, okay, so everyone else is doing that and I'm just trying to sit here and recycle and compost, and what effect am I really having? It can sometimes feel like it's just a drop in the bucket, but you have to just do what you can control, right? And this is where I think it's so helpful to just take one thing at a time to change and find something that you're excited about. Like, don't focus on that. I mean, don't ignore it, obviously. This is why we want to change, is because we're aware of landfills and we're aware of methane gas and we're aware of these problems that are really big. But to change them, we don't need to get super, you know, don't let it depress you or overwhelm you. Just focus on what you can change. Pick an area that really excites you and start there. And then just your changes totally have an impact. And I'm really emphasizing this because I just know that feeling of like, what is this really doing? Does it all matter? You know, you get this existential crisis over recycling. But if everyone did what you're doing, I mean, the problem would just be solved so much faster. So you just do what you can and take it one step at a time and we'll all get there eventually.
Yeah, one step at a time, one person at a time. You know, I'm a big believer in one person can really make a difference. And even if you just make a little difference for yourself, I have a client who is absolutely going to love this interview. She makes all natural laundry powder, and her inspiration was her child. And so I know that she's made a huge difference in my life. And reading this book and reading your blog, I know is going to cause an even bigger shift in my life than has already taken place. And so I love that you cover everything in this book. And of course, one of my favorite things is going back to, you know, cosmetics and choosing what you put on your body and not putting those chemicals that are going to absorb into your skin all over your body. Some of the things that you talk about are eye makeup remover and moisturizers. Oh my God, who doesn't need that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's nice to know that there are different levels that you can go with this. And I tried to find a few different options because I didn't want to make it seem like, okay, if you want to be eco-friendly, you have to be wearing hemp and you have to be wearing all organic makeup or no makeup at all. And you have to be doing this. Like, there's different levels that you can get involved in based on what you're comfortable with and what your interest level is. Like, I talk about, you know, really technically the best thing for the planet is if none of us wore makeup ever, because then there wouldn't be any, you know, anything to formulate. There wouldn't be any packaging. There wouldn't be anything to get rid of. But I like wearing makeup. I really enjoy it. It's something that makes me feel gorgeous and it's a nice part of my day. And I'm not quite ready to give that up yet. So there are choices that you can make about eco-friendly products or even just looking at the amount of packaging that your product has. And then choosing something where you can recycle the package after, like little things like that you can change. If you don't want to go whole hog, there are still little things that you can do that will add up and will make a difference.
And each step that you take, you know, again, affects the planet, and it's bringing in a more conscious way of living, you know. So when you hang out with your friends, or, you know, when you meet people that, you know, new people, do they look at you and say, oh my God, it's the eco green guru? Do they kind of run, or do they embrace, you know, the ideas that you have?
Well, I think a lot of it is very on the down low. Like, I don't think if a stranger just met me on the street, I don't think they would walk away with the impression of like, here's a green goddess when she goes walking on her cork sandals. Like, I don't, and this is an important point too, is that this is not my full-time job being a green person. Like, that's not my primary identity. I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a writer. I have a million different things that I do. And it doesn't have to be a full-time job for anybody. And that's really important, that I'm not an expert, that this isn't my full-time job. Anybody can do this with the hours that you have in the day. And it doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't take a lot of money. It just becomes part of your routine, that instead of going to the grocery store to buy laundry detergent, you make it. And instead of buying shampoo, you use the stuff that you've got in your pantry. And I don't think that, I mean, my friends and family at this point know that this is what I do, obviously, and that I'm excited about it. So I'll often get questions from them about different recipes, or I tried this, and, you know, what do you recommend about that, which is fantastic. But it's also not my primary identity. And if you want it to be, that's fine, but it doesn't have to be. You don't have to turn into a green person, and it can just be little things that you gradually change in your life, and they're really easy, and they're very simple to incorporate into your lifestyle without devoting 40 hours a week to doing them, and it's just something that you do. It just becomes something that you do, and it happens naturally.
All right, listeners. So again, I'm chatting with Madeline Somerville. You can find all of her information here at the Soulful Living page on empowerradio.com. Madeline, I didn't even mention this during the show at all, where people could connect with you. So I hope they stayed with us long enough. I got so engrossed in everything that you had to share. This was amazing. Thank you so much. And as we get down to the wire here, I love for my guests to leave the listeners with a thought or two that they can take out into the day to, live a little bit more soulful life. And to me, soulful living means living more conscious of our planet. So what would you say are one of the top things they could do?
I think one of the things that I try and really stress is to be gentle with yourself. And especially for women, we place such high expectations, and society places such high expectations on us and our identities as mothers, employees, people who have to look gorgeous all the time with minimal effort. You know, there's this list of stuff that we have to accomplish. And I just try and encourage people to be gentle. And this is the guilt-free part of the book, is that I really want people to just focus on changing one thing at a time. Don't become overwhelmed and feel like you have to go through your entire house and throw everything out and start from scratch. And if you don't do it all, you're a failure. Just start with one thing and go easy on yourself. And don't focus on the 3,000 things you're not doing yet, because it's always a continuum. You're always a work in progress. There's things that I'm not doing. There's things that I'm still waiting to try. But just go easy on yourself. Focus on what you are doing and let those small successes build and get you excited and propel you forward. And just keep doing one thing at a time.
I love that. And I really love the be gentle on yourself. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today. Again, listeners, you can find all of Madeline's information at the Soulful Living page here at empowerradio.com. And do that one thing. Thanks, Madeline.